This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Resource Centre. I'm Angeline Tay. With Brexit, there have been many concerns raised by the motor industry and also on the possibility of skills shortage. Although the impact is predominantly felt in the UK automotive industry, there may be a ripple effect for the automotive industry everywhere else. Steve Nash, CEO of the UK-based Institute of Motor Industry, shares the current changes in the motor industry in the UK.
Well, you know, actually nothing dramatic has happened. I mean, it's a big change, obviously. I think initially there's lots of speculation about what might happen. But right now, I mean, our industry has been going through quite a strong period, you know, for the last, certainly the last 4 years. We've seen a lot of growth. We've had a couple of record markets. The registrations of new cars have faltered a little bit in June, but June is a difficult month to judge because it's a very quiet month anyway. So you don't really know whether that's anything to do with Brexit, as it's called, or whether that's just kind of normal market conditions.
Would you be able to paint a picture of the motor industry, say, for the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, if you take a longer view of what's been going on with the motor industry in the UK, you know, coming out of the recession, the motor industry actually was one of those areas of the economy that kind of drove recovery, really. We started to see recovery sort of in the second half of 2011, and we've been seeing growth ever since, really. And as I said, we had a record market in 2014, an even bigger market in 2016. And we were heading for a similar sort of result in 2016. You know, at the moment, obviously, people are kind of tentative about where the market's going to go. But there is no real reason why the market should falter, to be honest with you. You know, a lot of sales are driven by people are tending to buy the use of a car now rather than buy the car. So they're leasing cars on 3 or 4 year contracts. Our interest rates are historically low and likely to go even lower. I was just listening to a debate on BBC's Radio 4 where there is some discussion that our interest rates could go to from a historic low of 0.5% to zero or somewhere close to zero. And so there's no real reason why people should stop buying cars. I think in the past, when we've had a bit of economic uncertainty, people have always said, you know, a car is the second most expensive thing you buy. And historically, that's been true. And so it's a purchase you might put off. But that's not quite the same when you're actually making a monthly payment. You know, so if your decision is about spending, you know, £200 or £300 a month rather than spending £25,000, it's a different decision. And I don't know that that will change anything particularly. You know, I think as well, you know, I think it's what's good news is when the decision for the UK to leave Europe initially came, it was clearly a bit of a shock because I don't think many people, including those who were on the leave side of the argument or of the debate, don't think any of them believed we actually would come out. But and then initially when our Prime Minister David Cameron effectively resigned and we were being told we might not have a new Prime Minister until after the Conservative conference sometime in October, that was all a bit disturbing. But things have worked out much better than that. We have a new Prime Minister, we have a new cabinet in place. And actually, you know, I think a lot of the initial it's fear of the unknown, really, I suppose, is the issue. And actually, people adjust to new realities pretty quickly, you know, and the bottom hasn't fallen out of anything over here. So we've got some, I guess, long-term negotiations to do with Europe. But, you know, we are one of their biggest trading partners. I mean, the UK is variously, you know, the second or third biggest market for most of the European car manufacturers and for a lot of the non-European car manufacturers. It's the second biggest market in the whole of Europe. So it's unlikely that anybody is going to want to do anything that's going, you know, on either side of the of things, you know, is going to want to do anything to damage that.
But I was just reading online that many concerns were raised right after Brexit, talking about skill shortage or even just Japanese car manufacturers. They are based in UK itself, saying that there could be, you know, increase of duties on cars and etc. Are those just, you know, hypothetical situations, or people are, like you said, you know, living a fear of uncertainties?
Yeah, I think when people don't know the answers, they make up all sorts of questions. You know what I mean? Look, I think it's very, for the reasons I said earlier, I think it's very unlikely. It wouldn't be in the interests of our, well, they are still currently our European partners because we haven't actually left Europe yet. You know, we just have, there's a process to go through for that to happen. But I know because I was formerly on the board of a major German car company in the UK. And the UK was a hugely, hugely important market for that brand and was for our competitors too. I mean, tariff barriers would be mutually damaging and it would make no sense whatsoever. German premium brands particularly do very, very well in the UK, in the UK market. They're almost volume cars these days. They do so well with typically the big three, the sort of BMW, Mercedes, Audi, selling in excess of 150,000 cars each into the UK market on an annual basis. Not to mention, you know, the wider Volkswagen group and so on. And then the same goes for the French and Italian manufacturers. You know, these are big markets for them. So I think this is an unprecedented situation. And I was actually at a motor industry conference about 2 days after the vote. And the person who was then our business secretary, there has been a change since, but he was at that time our business secretary in the government. He used the term, he said, this is literally unprecedented, so there is no instruction manual. And he's right, nobody's ever left the EU before. And I think on the one hand, you know, the big players in the EU don't want to make it look like it's too advantageous to leave, but at the same time, they don't want to slip, you know, they don't want to cut their own throats either. So I think sense will prevail, and I'm sure that we'll definitely, as far as the car industry is concerned, you don't want to mess up the second biggest market in the Europe, you know, in Europe, mm-hmm. and nobody's about to do that. I think where manufacturing is concerned, you know, the people that manufacture here, which includes the Japanese manufacturers and so on, like Nissan, the factories they have here are extremely efficient. They rank very, very well against their other factories worldwide. They have good labour relations, actually more flexible labour policies in the UK than normally prevail in the rest of the EU. That's one of those things that we kind of, you know, took an opt out of, and it's been an advantage to us, I think, in terms of manufacturing. So, you know, again, these are long-term investments, and we've seen so many things that never actually come to pass quite the way people predict. They always say a year's a long time in politics, and it truly is. I don't think anybody's about to make a knee-jerk reaction, and I think the concern we had around manufacturing was about what would happen in the long term. You know, nobody's about to move their factories out of the UK in the short term. But, you know, it all depends on the kind of deals we get, trade deals we sign, both with the EU and other parts of the world, as to what the long term decisions will be, you know, about maybe the next model or the models after that, that these factories would be normally due to make. And, you know, nobody knows the answer to that yet, but there's certainly no immediate effect.
Yeah. And I guess you're sort of implementing the wait and see what's going to happen next before any decisions being made.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain things that don't change, you know, and won't change really. I mean, we have an ongoing requirement for skills in our sector. And that's where my organization plays a big part, because obviously we are engaged in qualifying and educating people. And that won't change. I mean, our business is a sophisticated and complex business. And I mean, quite apart from what's going on with Brexit, you know, what we're seeing on a worldwide level is a level of technological change that's almost unprecedented in our industry. You know, we've been dealing with more and more sophisticated versions of the same technology over the last 100 years. And now all of a sudden, that's changing. So internal combustion engines are changing. I mean, we're seeing electric power, hybrid power, fuel cells, autonomous vehicles. So the burgeoning need for keeping the existing workforce up to speed and up to pace with those changes is a huge issue. And it's equally a huge issue to bring in new talent. And that's something that as an organisation that works internationally, we see basically on a worldwide basis. You know, there aren't fundamental differences in any market. There are local cultural differences, but they're kind of skin deep. You know, once you get beneath that, the fundamental issues that affect our industry are pretty much identical.
Will there be a change in standards and requirements that is currently conformed with the EU regulations? Because IMI, which is the Institute of Motor Industry, certification is available in 24 centres in Malaysia alone. So whatever happens in the UK will inevitably affect Malaysia. That's up next with Steve Nash, CEO of Institute of Motor Industry. This is Resource Centre, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're still tuning in to Resource Centre. Today, we're talking about the ripple effect of the motor industry post-Brexit. Our guest today is Steve Nash, CEO of Institute of Motor Industry, which offers certification to 24 automotive centres in Malaysia. So will standards and requirements that is conforming with the EU regulations affect Malaysia?
Well, actually, not in this circumstance, because the standards we work to are international standards and not European standards. They're international standards. I mean, we provide qualifications and accreditations for a lot of people within Europe, but actually, we provide a good deal more outside of Europe. I mean, we work in a lot of markets. Malaysia is one of our bigger sort of international partners. We do a lot of work in Malaysia, but broadly in the ASEAN region. In China too, in India, the USA, you know, all over the world basically. And so that the standards that we operate to are truly international and not EU. They're not affected by Brexit at all.
Would you be able to draw us a picture of the motor industry in this region, say ASEAN region, what's happening?
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time, actually, because you're seeing a great deal of growth. And I think coming from a relatively low base, I mean, relative to, you know, mature markets like the USA and the European bloc, we're seeing more rapid adoption or a keenness to rapidly adopt the new technology, which I think is really exciting. I mean, it's one of the things we've been working with your government in Malaysia on. They were early adopters, which is to their credit, in recognizing that people who work on high voltage systems on electric and hybrid cars need to be properly qualified, because these things, I mean, you know, they're perfectly safe to ride in and everything else. But if you don't know what you're doing, they could be quite dangerous to work on. So you need to be properly qualified. And you need to be educated as to where the high voltage systems are and how to work on them safely. And so we're seeing that as a lot of indications that there's a keenness to drive forward and be ahead of the curve in adopting these new technologies.
And Malaysia as a whole, you know, what should we look out for a potential ripple effect from Brexit, even though you've kind of made it clear that nothing much will change?
What I think actually might be interesting is the UK will ultimately be a different entity. It won't be a part of the European bloc anymore. And I think that the way that we trade as nations, there might be some benefit there to be had in how we trade with. I mean, we already trade pretty heavily with the ASEAN region, but I think there might be some, you know, that a lot of that is subject to wider EU agreements. You know, absolutely everything within the EU currently has to be agreed by 28 different partners, you know, whereas as a standalone economy, the UK is open to doing trade deals with countries on a bilateral basis. And I think that could be advantageous, actually, particularly as we have, you know, historically strong ties. So I would see upsides in that, actually, not downsides.
ASEAN region is really pushing forward to be a bloc as a whole, similar to EU. At the same time, we're hearing stories of Brexit. And if not sure when this will happen, because different governments work differently with different cultures, even languages are different in ASEAN region. But if we were to be as an ASEAN bloc, what do you think? It would benefit or not?
And I'm not putting any kind of personal view on this at all, but I'll give you a sort of an unbiased view, if you like. The UK joined the so-called common market back in the 73, That was a very, very good idea. And actually, I think had the option been on the table for us to be part of a common market, but not part of a federal EU, I think the vote would have been different. I think the thing that people were most concerned about, those who voted to leave the EU, the thing that a lot of them were most concerned about is that the EU is becoming way more than a common market. I mean, it has become way more than a common market. And there are strong pushes within the EU for more federalism. So, you know, ultimately, I think there are many who believe that there should be a single government within the EU, more or less, you know, that national governments would become less important, or almost like a kind of a local, like local government is within your own country. And I think because there's an awful lot of people working in Brussels for the EU who are, and I'm using other people's arguments here, not necessarily my own, but the feeling that a lot of people felt was there's an awful lot of unelected bureaucrats who have an awful lot of control over what we do within the EU, and that didn't feel very comfortable. So I think the idea of coming together as a bloc is actually a really good one, and we've seen lots of benefits from that, and we still want to be part of that. I mean, all of the discussion at the moment is how we can continue to trade freely with our partners in Europe, and I'm sure we'll find a way for that to continue to be done. I think what you probably want to avoid is a situation where you have some large bureaucratic organisation that kind of subsumes your national government. And I think the ASEAN bloc could look at the EU model and learn from that.
That was Steve Nash, CEO of Institute of Motor Industry. You've been listening to Resource Centre. I'm Angeline Tay, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.